Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, December 17th. It's 2 p.m. and the City Council will come to order. Carla, is it possible I could interrupt Dan Bazzini to bring the City Council to order? Would you please call the roll?
Yes. Leonard.
Sorry,
Fritz.
Dan.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Would you please read the title for 2 p.m. time certain, item number 1753.
Accept the proposed improvements to Public Works Development Review and Permitting Services.
Paul?
Yes.
Who is it? Paul, David? Okay. Whoever?
Paul, David, Dean.
Dean, you want to come forward?
Yeah. Oh, are you going to run
Commissioner,
the mic?
No.
We appreciate the brevity of Commissioner Leonard's introduction.
There he is.
It's the last council meeting of the year, okay? It's the last council meeting. Commissioner Leonard, introduction?
Yes, Dean Marriott, Paul Scarlett, and David Schaff.
That is your best. Yeah, that really is your best. Yeah, really.
Okay, well, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Paul Scarlett, BDS Director, here to present on the development of the co-location reports that's been submitted to you in the past in April, July, and September, where a number of objectives were reviewed and explored in conjunction with BDS and interagency bureaus, water, BES, PBOT, and parks. And the big piece of this really is the management and the staff who worked on it. They had our support. It's in connection with improving the Public Works Development Review and Permitting Services process, of course, to better align with the building and zoning development review process that BDS sort of overlooks and implements. The pieces have their technical in nature, but the part I really want to underscore is the amount of work, the collaborative approach that went into developing to what is at this point the ordinances to put to essentially implement the pieces of the development review improvement processes. And the technical pieces will be presented, by the management team, co-location team members, Andy Peterson and Lana and company will come up afterwards. But I'm pretty much here to support and to promote that this process has gone well. We had outside involvement through the development review membership. And we have not heard anything but good support, good praises, and we could actually use this approach as a model for how to develop city policies. It really was roll up your sleeve and let's be solution-oriented. The pieces, technical or not, the important piece is how involved the development community got, along with all the bureaus, in being collaborative and knowing that what Mayor Adams started out a year ago is through extensive work and real careful deliberation, we have what we believe is an ordinance that ties the pieces around timelines and standard fees and processes that will help the city's development permitting process to be a better just approach for its customers, its employees, and those on the outside, the stakeholders who look to the City of Portland for investment processes and future development. So I'm pleased to be here with the other bureau directors, and I'll turn it over.
Yeah. It's like magic.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Want to go ahead, Dean?
Well, good afternoon. I'm Dean Marriott, Director of Environmental Services. Thanks to Paul for chairing this session. I'll be very brief. We have been very supportive and have been participating. You'll hear members of the team come up right after us to talk about the specifics that are in front of you today. Just want to be here to say that we are supportive of the process, and the co-location has happened. The move has taken place, so the first major physical move has actually happened, and the staffs are getting settled in and beginning that process. I just want to compliment the people sitting behind us who have really done the very hard work involved with working out the details and explaining how this is all going to work. And after all, this is really about us making sure that the public system works to its highest degree and provides the best customer service. And we totally are in favor of that. David, I'll turn it over to you.
I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. And I would like to echo what Dean just said. I went by the facility Monday, toured it. Water Bureau is right next to PBOT, which is right next to BES, and across the hall is BDS. And already my folks were saying how much more efficient I think they think this process will be. I went down to the Development Service Center, which is closed on Monday, but we toured our section. And we worked hard on making sure that all these bureaus got together on the same floor, co-located next to each other, and are working together. So I think this is going to be a great success in the long run. It took a while to get there, and it was a struggle, but the folks behind us worked very hard, and we're very pleased.
I'm Susan Keel, the Director of Transportation, and what they've said I agree to here. We've spent so much time on this that we're thinking of developing a company song so that we can sing it together.
No, we're not.
but we really have invested a lot of effort and the staff more than we have on this. But I'm also convinced that it's going to be successful. And our folks have already indicated that there have been some small wins as a result of the co-location. So I think it's a good thing, and we're going to make it work.
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Andy and company, come up.
Yeah, sing it, start up.
Is there enough?
Yeah.
It's good, yeah.
Good afternoon. I'm Andy Peterson with the Bureau of Development Services. We're here today to discuss the ordinances that have been placed before you for the improvements to the public works permitting process. I want to touch base first on some of the folks that have been extremely instrumental in making this work, and Christine Leon, Cindy Dietz, Lana Danaher, as well as our workhorse Dan Vizzini and Chris Weir have been of significant benefit to this team and our approach to this. Just a recognition for them. It's been tremendous to work with them, and for us it's kind of helped pull together that collaboration of the different bureaus as we've gone through this process. And with that, we'll kind of move forward into where we've been and where we're headed. The co-location milestones, back in April we went through a process to identify several steps that we were going to work on, bringing the bureaus closer together in the permitting services and improvements, both in permitting appeals and some SDC reforms. July, we were back discussing with council some of our early steps and adopted some interagency recommendations on public works permitting, turnaround times, predictable fees, and appeals process, and discussed the co-location of staff. September 23rd, we were back establishing the process for bringing forward some new fees for the public works permitting process, some code changes necessary for SDC policies and waivers to occur, as well as rather fundamental change to some of the appeals processes for the infrastructure bureaus. As of December 7th, the bureaus have been co-located. The development review staff has been co-located to the 1900 building. And again, as was mentioned earlier, we've seen some early successes from that all, at this time. And our belief is that will clearly continue to build as we move forward in time. Today, we're back to consider these three ordinances developed by the interagency team with the help and feedback from our external guidance groups. The ordinances in front of you will be to authorize a new fee for public works permitting services that reflect the new permitting process, to standardize policies for SDC deferrals and installment payments, as well as standardizing policies for the repayment of SDCs when affordable housing exemptions are not met and need to be rescinded. We'll be back in January with an appeals process, but in January we will initiate the new public works permitting procedures and present code changes and administrative new rules for the appeals process. Lana will talk about the new public works permitting process and how we've been able to construct that with our external agency help.
Okay, I'm Lana Danaher with Bureau of Environmental Services. The first slide is about the process improvements, because in order to understand the fees, you really need to see the difference in the process. And this is a fundamental, deep change in the way we do business. If you take a look at the current process prior to when we started all of this, you will see that the developer is on the left starting amidst a circle of all the different review groups and functions that the developer or their agent has to go to try to coordinate decision-making and issues, and then went through and had to, again, go to each of the bureaus separately. We had made some improvements on collaboration, but it was pretty minor compared to what we are proposing now. The recommended process is far different. What we do is we're engaged with them during the design process itself. We are an owner of these facilities when they're finished, and so we are committed to being on the design team as the owner, as the future owner. So we will be working with them in significant steps, starting with an inquiry and then a concept review meeting, which we will be at which we will give definite information that we will hold be held accountable for as to what the costs will be, a design review meeting at 60% or approximately, an intake review, a final check-in to make sure we've got it all straight, and then the permit review issuance. If we succeed, the permit review issuance phase that used to take so much time, which used to be a back-and-forth discussion about decisions that they had already made that we didn't really understand or know why they made, will be very brief. We've put in here 10 weeks, but frankly, if we get this right, it'll be less than that. How long should it take if we've worked out all the issues ahead of time? So, but we're not making commitment to it being less at this point. But today there's what we're
yes,
doing.
Yes, you are.
Today, what we're doing is about the fees, which follow from that. Is current code doesn't give us the flexibility to charge for these earlier events. So, what this does is allow us to do a soft launch in January, to suspend the existing permitting fees, and adopt a special schedule for the period January through June. Declares an emergency so that we can implement them right away, beginning with anything that comes in the door January 3rd. And it also authorizes us to review the fee structure and cost recovery calculations in April and propose code amendments based on our lessons learned and feedback from stakeholders. It also charges us with performing annual review of cost recovery calculations and comparing fee estimates to actual code program costs. So the thing to remember here is that this is a soft launch. This allows us to test out our assumptions and make sure that we get it right before we get it in stone, or at least pavement.
Soft concrete.
Soft concrete, yeah. Nothing's in stone around here. Okay, so the fees. During the public works inquiry, the applicant has one of two choices. They have a basic guidance. This would be your small, pretty simple process, one that they don't have. Frankly, we want to protect these projects because they're very small. They don't have a lot of money. They may not have the ability to spend a great deal on a detailed consultation, nor do they likely have the need. These would be simple site-specific reviews. A standardized report is what they would get, present and get, and it would be a briefing with our public works permit process manager or staff. Or if the more complex and larger projects, ones where there's some significant issues that we know that there'll have to be resolution, they can have a detailed consultation. And those would be $3,000 a meeting. and would involve a comprehensive concept review, a detailed report that they carry away with them, and a consultation with all of the review with members of all of the review team. Then at
before you move on, how does a developer or an applicant know whether they need basic guidance or detailed consultation?
Well, most of them know because they. But those that didn't would be able to discuss that with us, and we can help them make that decision. And the Public Works Permit Manager could assist them with that.
Part of our, as this progresses, is a outreach and a information
yes.
system that we would then we. Our intent is to provide information out to the customer base so that they can screen, do a little self-screening, a phone number with someone to talk to at the other end of it from our Public Works element, and have that discussion ahead of time before they get too far down the system.
Yes.
I guess I'm wondering that there's some really basic small projects which are clear and there's some very complicated ones which are clear. How do you know when you're in the middle of that, where the cutoff is, if you have a medium difficulty project?
Medium difficulty. Well, I think it would really be a consultation with a permit manager in order to determine it on a case-by-case basis. Hopefully, we'll be able over the next few months to come up with pretty specific criteria. I don't know that we know now where that criteria will be. There's quite a few questions that the answer will be like that. That's why we're doing a soft launch.
Got it.
But I think that the onus will be on us to help develop some clear criteria for those distinctions.
Well, and there might be also the opportunity, and I think in talking to my folks, you're going to sort of the online sort of if your proposal has, you know, these elements, it's probably a basic
right.
guidance.
Yeah.
These elements, probably detailed consultation. And then I also got from somebody that you're kind of going to guide everything. You're going to, if in doubt, you go to basic guidance.
Yes.
Guidance as
right.
sort of the default.
One of the reasons it's, frankly, $150 does not totally pay for this fee, the cost of this, but we want people to at least come in with this. And there may be people who come into the basic guidance and decide that they want more, and they can do that. We're not directing them to that they have to do one or the other, but we will be doing outreach. We'll have online assistance. I think you'll see in the bump package some elements of where we want to get some outreach to people so that they know the options that are available to them. So moving on to the concept review, at 30%, and this is a very significant event because this is the place where hopefully based on what they've learned from Public Works Inquiry or from the in-depth consultation, the issues that have been identified, all those red flags have been identified, this is where we will flesh those out and come up with a project-specific fee schedule. And this will be based on a 30% concept plan, and we will be able to articulate a fee schedule that we will be held accountable for. It will be not a not-to-exceed number.
That's great.
So we'll have a great deal of investment, obviously, in being engaged in this.
That's a huge... That
is
huge change.
Is that part written in stone?
Or? Yeah. Well, yes. I think it's written to the point that this is the piece that our public stakeholders are the most excited about.
And how will you know when you're at 30%?
Again, that is, we have been working very hard at defining those, what defines each of these phases. And I didn't bring those today, but it's quite detailed definitions for each of those phases.
And if it turns out that the project costs more than the the fixed fee, how is that subsidized? Who pays for
that? The bureaus will be held responsible for subsidizing that through their regular budget. So that is something that we will be held accountable to try to keep that through, keep that fair, and also realize that we do an annual review of those costs and our rates, and we'll have to show that we are staying in balance.
What about development services, which doesn't have any extra money right now?
This isn't development services. This is all Public Works Bureaus.
Public Works Bureaus. Okay, thank you.
I think this is fantastic. It's going to keep the onus on all of us, including the council, to continue to perfect our work. And it's been something, I mean, you're suddenly becoming, you know, best practice when you look around the nation, and I think that's fantastic. The disclaimer is, if the conditions change, the conditions in the application change from that 30%, then...
We do discuss that, and if there's a scope change, and
scope
again,
change,
right, if the scope change is significant, then they will have to go back through. And I am, and again, this is one of those things that we have to be clear as to what are the defining characteristics of that have characterized that fee that we've estimated. And there's elements, there's units that are within those fees that we have been working on pricing to make sure that it's clear and transparent how we've come up with the costs.
And just everyone has a piece of this, I think,
I don't have any.
Except for, and that is, I think, also to capture, if not right away, whenever we figure out a better data system for you all, that Commissioner Leonard's working on, is to also get the information of the owner, not just the professional service provider, so that some of the communications is copied to the owner, so that when we're to be blamed, we should be. But when we're not to be blamed,
We have written that in, that the owner has to be involved in this to a greater extent than in the past, and not just the agent.
Well, I would ask for those emails, and I would copy them on your email so that they can see.
Yeah, we actually have made that change recently. Yeah. In any case. So that's the 30% concept review is vital because that establishes the scope that then proceeds with the actual design. The design review is at 60%. This is when we bring in construction management folks as well to talk about constructability. This is also based upon a fixed fee that has been established at 30%. If in fact they don't, this is where the onus shifts a little bit because we're held accountable, but our applicants are also accountable. They will need to have produced a 60% plan that meets the clear criteria we've established. And if they don't, we will not be accepting it. Now, if it's just a little tweaking here and there, that's one thing. But if we have to go back through another 30% because they've significantly changed their scope, they will have to pay over again. And moving on to the intake review, it gets easier as we move down because we've honed in. The tough stuff is at the beginning. Now we do an intake review. It should be getting easier and easier to check through, make sure that they've actually produced what it is we all agreed to. And then the final plan check is basically what we call the Mylar review, when they put it down. They write it in their equivalent of stone, and we review and make sure that everything that we have commented upon has been implemented as we have agreed. So the key here is that it's a fixed fee. It's based on the fee statement calculated at 30% review, and that if their scope changes, they get charged more. If it doesn't change and the elements of the job have stayed the same, but we guessed wrong, we will be held accountable for those mistakes and be obligated for it. If you take a look at the current versus recommended real fast, you can see the difference between the current fee structure, processing time, and what we're discussing in improvements. And really the difference here is that we're engaged during an early scoping and discovery session that is formalized and documented. We will have our reviews coordinated. Each of these sessions have all the bureaus there and are working together. Decisions are documented, established. By the way, that documentation includes any kind of adjustments that have been made or issues that have come up that have had to get resolved, because we want to feed that into policy changes, if you recall past discussions. We'll have established turnaround times and predictable review fees. And for these reasons, our review groups so far have our Public Works Process User Group that we've established, and DRAC members who have been engaged in with this have been very supportive, because the criteria that were given to us of coming up with something that's predictable and dependable has been met. And now I believe Cindy's going to talk about the SDC portion of our package.
I'm Cindy Dietz, and I'm with the Portland Water Bureau, and I'm going to be talking about the next three slides associated with SDCs. So the slide that says that talks about SDC deferrals and SDC installment payment plans. So what exists today? Well, system development charges are assessed by Transportation, Parks and Recreation, Environmental Services, and the Portland Water Bureau. Only two bureaus, Transportation and Parks, offer SDC deferrals, and those are 180-day no-interest deferrals. All four bureaus offer SDC installment payment plans secured by a property lien, but two bureaus offer a maximum 20-year payment term, and two bureaus offer a maximum 10-year repayment term. So what we're proposing is that all SDCs be deferred and that be offered at least a deferral, and that the length of the deferral period will be based upon the value of the development project. The deferral would be secured by a master financing agreement and a property lien. The customer will pay a processing fee and interest during the deferral period. In terms of installment payment plans, those will be secured also by a master financing agreement and a property lien. And all customers will have an option of 5, 10, or 20 years in terms of payment plan options. The next slide talks about SDC exemptions and repayments. And the city provides SDC exemptions for qualified affordable housing developments. And again, what exists today? Well, each bureau has their own set of code language regarding the exemptions. And the code language and the policies are not exactly in alignment with each other. So what is being proposed? What we propose is to create a single section in code that standardizes the granting of the SDC exemptions for affordable housing provided by the city. And for SDC repayments, the SDCs will be calculated based on rates that are in effect at the time of building permit issuance, with interest that's charged using the city's interim interest rate, which is set by council on an annual basis. What is that currently? It's currently 6.75%. And then the third slide is really a summary, a comparative analysis. It's really just highlighting the differences between what exists and what is proposed, both for the SDC deferrals and the installment plans, as well as the SDC exemptions and the repayments.
So what's the estimated effect on the 10-11 budget?
Well, in some cases, I think in some cases there's been no effect really anticipated or an effect that's hard to predict. Some of it really depends upon the developer and their interest in signing up for them or not.
But if we're moving to paying the SDCs at the end of the project rather than at the beginning, mm-hmm. there's going to be a loss of revenue in the next year.
That exists currently. Right. They currently have deferrals. They're just making the deferrals consistent with each other. So some are 20, some are 10.
Some of them can't be deferred right now, is my understanding of what you just said.
BES has not offered deferrals for their portion of the fees, but it's since this is a financing, I really don't think it will make a significant, if any, difference.
In some cases, what we see are attempts to utilize the affordable housing exemption as a deferral. Informal deferral process as well. This gives a clear avenue for a deferral process that will work for all projects and be there and available for anyone who wants to use it, as opposed to only some of the SDCs on some of the projects that may sometimes be able to meet affordable housing exemptions.
But tell me again, which SDCs cannot currently be deferred?
It's by bureau, so as Lana said, Environmental Services doesn't offer deferrals, and currently neither does the Water Bureau.
So in those two bureaus, there would be an effect on next year's budget because you wouldn't be getting that money in.
Well, we're not seeing a lot of development in a hot year. If we had done it in the middle of the hot year, maybe. I mean, a year with a lot of permits, maybe.
Yeah, I really suspect one of the things that Andy referred to is what we suspect has been happening is that in some cases people have made changes in their project in order to get around the fact that some bureaus don't do a deferral. So they phase their permitting, or they sign up and say that they're low income deferral, and they get a low income deferral, and then when they flip it, they end up having to pay it back because it really wasn't a low income deferral. Right. So they've done things of that sort. That's why I say my hunch is, and I'm saying hunch because I don't have clear data to demonstrate this, that we won't see significant impact.
Has the Office of Management and Finance looked at this?
I don't believe so.
So just to fill out that conversation, I am very supportive of offering more expansive deferrals and a consistent set of deferrals. The way that SDCs work in transportation and BES, and I think in the others, is we actually bond against historic trends of, and they keep track by the economy up and down, but by historic trends of income from SDC. So it's never been a pay-as-you-go SDC system. So the concern, legitimate good concern, is will fewer projects get the SDCs for which they are counting on and are budgeted because we bond SDCs or anticipated SDC revenues? I doubt that we'll see. Depends on how long the recession goes, but that's a different reason. I think we'll be okay.
Financing agreement, so.
I want to make sure I understand one piece of this. So when a developer comes to BDS with a project, typically they have their hard costs, and when they're getting their permits for a project, they have hard costs and soft costs. Hard costs are usually the financing for the bricks and the mortar and the other stuff. Their soft costs will include the SDCs and the fees that they have to incur, correct? And typically you have to pay those soft costs up front, or as banks are getting tighter with credit, you have to show the ability to cover your soft costs on top of everything else. So the concern that we've had from the development community is at a time when the credit is harder to get, it's more challenging for them to come up with all the soft costs at the front of the project. Mm-hmm. This is sort of prepaying even before you've built the project. At the permit stage, am I correct so far?
Yes.
So the deferral, the first part of any deferral is actually allowing someone to defer having to pay the cost of an SDC until there's a project that's actually up and running, and there is at that point an impact on the systems. I mean, in a sense, we've been asking people to prepay those fees even before there's an impact. Is that correct?
Right. We've tried to match it with some proximity to when the normal construction activity would be concluded based on the value of the project.
I see. And what you're proposing here, as I read it, wouldn't impact affordable housing other than you're cleaning up the code language so it's just consistent.
Correct.
But you'd still be eligible for your exemption of existing SDCs if you meet the definitions of affordability, which my colleagues should know under the existing language, is actually more generous than we use for other standards. You go to 100% of MFI, so that's a more generous standard than we use for other definitions of affordability. But on the, let's say, Parks SDCs, you are also creating a uniform, you're making a recommendation for a uniform deferral policy, which will allow someone to extend that out for some time with an interest rate as set by the council. And so for someone who is currently coming before us and saying that in this economy the SDCs are a make it or break it cost factor in actually building, this would give them terms which will allow them to extend the payments and in effect make their short-term cost less to do this.
Their immediate cost, yes.
Their immediate cost.
Cash flow, yeah.
Right.
On the cash flow.
Right.
This allows them to, in essence, finance some of those soft costs, mm-hmm. whether the bank is agreeable to that. Whether the bank gives you full credit for that or not is a different matter. We're just talking about the city side. Am I on the right track?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
More discussion? Or Christine, did you want to?
Were you done? Were you done, Cindy?
Yes. A slide.
Okay, thank you.
I just have one slide. So I'm Christine Leanne, and I manage the Portland Bureau of Transportation Development Services Division, and I'm going to focus on the costs. So there's a slide.
It's up there.
Oh, there we go. Thank you. So the efficiencies, the changes in public works permitting reform, and the relocation, the appeals that will come to you in January, those will be not without cost. And so what we anticipate, what the bureaus anticipate, is in the winter budget adjustment, we will be coming forward with a request. We have some preliminary numbers right now, and they're really for this one fiscal year. There is going to be an addition for next fiscal year when we come forward as bureaus, as rate-making ordinances, the request to also adjust some of our budgets in the development services sections of the various interagency bureaus. So to date, the concepts that we've developed that we've been talking about here have been mainly done by absorption with the bureaus. The workload's down, so we've had some ability to put our efforts into this basically for the last year. But we're starting to get into the real implementation phase, and so as we see what we need, those will be real costs. So just to run through what we're estimating, we have moved up there, and there's about 40 people that have been relocated, and we have the preliminary numbers for that move cost and the additional rent for the bureaus for this fiscal year. So the relocation costs, which was furniture, some IT moving, some space planning, that is estimated right now to be about $180,000. We should be able to get the final number next week. The rent for the rest of this fiscal year is going to be $157,000. And then we've talked about the outreach and the need to train staff, the need to let our clients know what's going on, the need to update our IT systems, whatever that system's going to be. These are going to be real numbers. We have to develop brochures. We need to come up with some new programming for the computer systems. So, and then we need some more staff, too, to help like be a secretary to some of the appeals programs, to help with some more of the outreach. So those are estimated to be another $100,000 for the public outreach and $110,000 for the staff training piece. So for this fiscal year, when we come through as bureaus with the budget adjustment in the, I think it's January, February, the bureaus are going to be asking for $750,000, basically, a budget adjustment. I don't know if you remember, but back in March, April, when the original proposal was consolidation, there was an estimate, and I pulled it out, of what the one-time costs were going to be when it was consolidation, and it was going to be $690,000. So
when we went to co-location, didn't we put something in the budget for that?
No, we didn't. We had discussions about it, at least within the Bureau of Transportation, but we didn't do that because we didn't know what the costs were going to be. So.
This is our entire contingency for the rest of the year.
Not all of it's borne on general fund, though.
Right.
That's really?
Correct.
So how much of it comes out of the general fund?
We haven't had those discussions yet.
That's for our job. That's not their job to figure out.
It isn't necessarily any of it would come out of the general fund because you have PDOT, water, BES. Potentially parks, but
right. So we haven't budgeted for these specific costs. So within the Bureau of Transportation, there may be a contingency that can cover it, but we don't have an authorization. Right. So that may be part of the budget adjustment. Right. It may not be coming as a request from general fund, but we have to reappropriate within our bureau.
So if I vote to support these, am I saying that I support the funding?
No.
That will come back.
Yeah. That will be a separate action. Right. This is more of a
this goes
up.
Through the this
Except
is
the relocation has already been spent, so
right. And this is we're getting from our staff team their best estimate right. of of the costs, and then OMF goes to work and scrubs that. And
could I just get a clarification? Did you say a moment ago that the original estimate for the full consolidation was less than this particular calculation for co-location?
Yeah, when It was based on a concept back in March of what the consolidation was going to be for one-time costs, and that was $690,000. And then they estimated way back then for the ongoing cost to be $645,000. So,
and that didn't necessarily
it's
include
apples
rent.
Apples and oranges, yeah. But yeah. I just thought it would be an interesting kind of piece of history.
You know, I getting to the age where my memory is so faulty that I'm just going to put a disclaimer out, but I could have sworn that we quantified some substantial savings when we had this discussion of co-location versus full consolidation. In fact, I remember a lengthy discussion about substantial savings. So I don't understand why these numbers, at least concept numbers, would be higher than what was projected for consolidation.
I think some of the reason, too, is we estimated the IT costs back in March to be about $40,000. We're saying those are going to be about $200,000 now because we're getting closer to actual numbers for an SDC calculator, and we actually have DRAC support and endorsement to move forward with that piece. So we've been able to get a better estimate. In addition, for the fee estimator, it's going to run probably around $100,000. So we underestimated when we were developing the concept way back in March. So that's some of the reason why the numbers are different. We really didn't know what it was going to take. In addition, the training and outreach was really, I think, low estimated back in the spring. So,
and those increases would have been the same increases because those activities were the same, whether it was consolidation or co-location. Your IT changes would have had to have happened. In fact, more would have had to have happened. So those increases would be identical.
Back actually in March, we said the move was going to cost $300,000, and it's only cost $180,000. So it's a little different.
Well, having managed my own process of co-location / consolidation, I understand that the numbers are not firm until you actually go through the exercise. But when we get to the winter bump, I'd be interested in just seeing the original estimates on both co-location and consolidation and see them in the context of this. I realize you're not asking for us to address that, but I'd like to know more about those numbers.
Sure. So just one further thing to state. When we do come forward with our rate-making ordinances in the spring, we're going to take into consideration the things that we are going to learn over these next 6 months. We're hoping that there is enough data from projects to enable us to learn what we need to do to our fees, and we will adjust accordingly. We're going to continue with our user group, but we're hoping to get measures of success implemented and do continuous improvement. So,
more discussion from council?
I have a question about the role of development services and how the funding is. Are development services staff involved in this at all?
In which part of the?
The Bureau of Development Services staff.
Involved in supporting this work, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are. We've been involved from, you know, this time last year.
So how are we going to fund your piece of, because this is very labor intensive, and it's certainly a good process, and eventually I think it's going to be cost effective for both the developers and for the city. Mm-hmm. But certainly while we're learning and people are establishing this process, $150 is not going to cover your costs for having folks at that meeting.
On those early inquiry meetings, they will be more directed towards the public works functions as opposed to the private side development.
So how does the work of the staff in development services play into this at all?
What we did talk earlier on about is that there are multiple entries into the public works permitting process. One is those is a pre-application conference, which is a BDS-oriented discussion of land use that surrounds development. The Public Works Bureaus will be involved in those as well and provide information to the applicant at that time. Those costs are already incorporated, or the BDS costs are already incorporated in that pre-application conference. The balance of this is basically staff will, you know, our staff is the folks, are the folks that are at the entry portal for the Development Services Center, which we use as a collaborative piece. It's a cooperative function that we have with both PBOT, Water, and BES. There's not a person that walks into the DSC without interacting with a BDS employee.
So are you telling me that you have enough staff to do this now without an additional?
Our role in this is primarily my participation, as well as one staff person that has helped coordinate, assist, and will, you know, our proposal is to look forward into the outreach, education, training. How can we complement that? They have a wide background in land use, building permit, and our permitting system. How can we assist in development of the new programs that need to be created for the public works permitting process as well as the appeals process? So we are, augmenting the program in that manner, but not to the same extent that the public works permitting staff engineering review is participating.
Okay. I would take it one step further and say that it's arguable that this process that these three capable representatives that just articulated could reduce the workload of BDS, because what used to be a system that BDS was considered to be the point on all development, notwithstanding the fact that they had no connection with some of these public works processes, meant that somebody at BDS was trying to dog down who it was that had this held up. What you're hearing described here today in my world is nothing short of revolutionary, something that would have been incomprehensible two or three years ago, and I think in many ways actually frees up our staff to focus on BDS development issues and less on public works issues that we've heard today explained in a way that I find hugely refreshing and inspiring in terms of how we can facilitate permitting processes in the city.
One way to look at this is that over the last 8 years, BDS has transformed how we do a lot of work, and we've done it over an 8-year period. And what we've worked together to do is for the infrastructure bureaus, these bureaus, to work with us over that course of time. They've watched, learned, and now I think we've kind of compressed a lot of what we did over a period of time into ramping it up quickly into a 1-year time frame, and we're going to carry that over the next year and a half.
With a much friendlier face, I might add.
that's one perception. That's kind of one picture that I've used to look at this, is that we had some time to express this and learn it and move through that process. And the time frame that PBOT, BES, and Water have been, and Parks has participated as well, as everybody's had to kind of compress and learn and take this on in a very quick time frame. Changing, learning, moving forward, talking to the constituent groups, all of these things were in play, but what we've done is taken them and compressed them down, which is, you have those three factors, time, money, and staff, and at this point, all of those three are coming together at one time, and that's why the cost is there and the staff demands are there, and we're coming out with a product that has a shorter time frame associated with it.
So if I could just, on that point, I work with Commissioner Leonard on aspects of this co-location, so I applaud the work that you've done in terms of reforming the system, and I applaud the emphasis on predictability and uniformity, and I also and the innovation. I guess there's a piece of this I'm still not clear about. I just need your help. So the system itself is being reformed, but now we're also talking about some changes with SDCs, where we have some uniform rules as to certain bureaus, which I think is also laudable. But now there's a piece of it that I'm not sure I know the answer to. You might have run this. You can help me. But if everybody who comes in to pull a permit opts for a 20-year deferral with financing,
20-year financing, right?
On a Parks SDC, how does that impact the cash flow to Parks in terms of the SDC revenue, particularly since we've got programs in the pipeline waiting for money to come in? How does that practically affect the cash flow?
Here comes our SDC expert.
Commissioner Fritz asked this question.
So, and maybe if we could get some information from OMF about that.
There's a simple answer, though.
Yeah, let's distinguish. Dan Vizzini, Bureau of Environmental Services. Let's distinguish the deferral from the loan.
Yep.
So I come in, I have a building permit, I have an SDC due before I get my building permit, and I sign a piece of paper that says I want to defer that payment, that or the loan payment, for 12 months. Okay. My project is worth more than $7 million. The deferral program that we have in place allows me 12 months from that date. So 12 months goes by, and at the end of the 12 months, I get to choose. I either pay cash, pay off the SDC, or the deferral rolls into a special assessment loan that I can pay monthly or semi-annually over 5, 10, or 20 years.
Who underwrites the loan?
So then here's the genius of special assessment financing. So the city auditor's office accumulates all of those contracts for loans and goes to the bond market, municipal bond market, and sells special assessment bonds. We sell special assessment bonds in the bond market equal to the value of those loans. The city collects that money and distributes it back to the bureaus whose SDCs make up that loan portfolio.
Isn't that how this economy got into the mess to begin with?
Who's
advising us on this?
But there's a key distinction.
The
municipal bond program in the United States is so much more secure than the commercial paper market.
And the security here is we've got a first lien on the property.
You have a first lien on the property, and then you have the city is pledging a first call on revenues if the loans fail and we're not able to collect through foreclosure the amount needed to cover the loans, then ultimately the ultimate security for these is revenues of the Bureau of the Cities.
So we're using our good credit, and
we do this
a lot. So and that risk is
right.
Almost non-existent.
Right. So Parks Bureau gets the value of those loans in cash when the bonds sell.
Hold on.
And you go forth and build good things with that.
Thank you.
And then the property owner who took out the loan repays the city, and we in turn repay the bondholders.
So that was a perfect
answer,
because I think I even understood it. Now, so under these uniform rules, then to what extent are we changing the deferral rules?
Right. So what we have done is to say that we've swapped out a 180-day deferral for park or transportation SDC for a deferral based on the size of the project, a deferral period, and a deferral that is now can be applied to not only transportation and park SDCs, but water and BES.
And that's the steps of 6, 9, and 12.
Correct.
So at most it's $12 million for a project that's valued at greater than $7 million, and then something.
Correct. So to get back to Commissioner Fritz's concern, the budget impact is really limited because the deferral period can only last, the maximum is 12 months. For the biggest projects. And then at the end of that 12 months, we're either going to get a cash payment from the developer, or we're going to get it rolled into a loan, in which case we're going to get bond proceeds. So the city is in, the Parks Bureau is accumulating this revenue to build projects. And as Commissioner Leonard said, the loan program, the loan financing, is really what is going to, it's the bond sale that's going to capitalize all of this.
And would we be recommending a modified deferral period, even if we were in a robust economy? Are there things you've heard through the DRAC process that justify this, even if we weren't dealing with hard-pressed developers?
Yes, and it goes to that point about not wanting to have to come up with the cash before the development has been realized from the developer's point of view. So the deferral is a good idea because it helps generate development. That's what we want to do. But it also does it in a way that still ensures that we're going to receive the SDC payment that is needed for the systems improvements that are needed.
Well, what's important to recognize in the current discussion that is happening relative to DRAC and the letter that it's sent or is sending relative to SDCs is that when developers, for instance, in a housing project build a house, they may take advantage of these deferrals. But what they're looking for is short-term loans that they can then pay off when somebody buys the house in the short term. So it matters a great deal more to them what the actual cost of the SDC is because they've got to pay off that loan with the proceeds from the sale than it is what the deferral period is versus a single-family dwelling owner who may be who may be taking advantage of one of these deferrals and spreading over 20-year period.
But what I've learned here is that just, well, I guess what you've clarified, I by reading this, I guess I should have figured it out for myself, but the it's well written, is that we're really providing two benefits here. We're an extended deferral period for certain projects and a longer-term financing of the SDCs. And those are the two benefits we're offering people so that to address the impact of those soft costs at the front end of a project.
Right. And the reason we're doing this way, real quick, the reason we're doing this way is state law doesn't allow us to go after the project, to hold up the occupancy of a project to pay SDCs. So the only point in time that we can strike this deal with the developer is when the permits are issued. And so by having the developer sign a financing agreement that authorizes the deferral and the loan, we are able to protect our interests while at the same time providing this financing mechanism for the developer.
Thank you very much.
So if I recall correctly, prior conversations I've had with the prior city treasurer, some of these financing schemes actually generate revenue for the city in that the amount of interest that is charged to the developer may be more than what we pay on the bonds that we bond out.
The current code had interest rates at 12%. We are reducing it down to the interim interest rate that's set by council for the special assessment loan program, which is closer to your cost the city's cost capital or the opportunity lost.
So the arbitrage benefit that we had doesn't exist anymore with this program.
That interim interest rate is intended to be set fairly close to what the long-term bond rate is going to be anyway. So,
and why did we do that?
The reason we did that was that it seemed, at least to me personally, that it was indefensible to charge 12% interest. That seemed usury. It wasn't really linked to any cost of money.
Strike that.
Whereas
that's outrageous.
Well, the 6-year statute of limitations for recovery under the usury law is not expired. And I'm going to gavel this meeting to a close.
And you're the first person I'm gaveling. All right.
Mayor, take control of this meeting, please.
Thank you,
Dan.
We
heard just enough. Handling arbitrage and usury. I won't put my name on this.
So, in a city where 85% of our businesses are 10 or less employees, we have a lot of folks that work on these kinds of projects, a lot of companies that work on these kinds of projects, and small investors that whose benefit of this uniformed approach, their benefit will be amplified compared to the larger users, although it's open. It's non-discriminate, open to anybody. But right. We need to recognize that a lot of our folks in the construction industry that would take out permits for public works are smaller firms.
Yeah.
An additional benefit is that all the bureaus are now aligned, so they don't have to have a scorecard to figure out the different distinctions between the business practices. So now all the bureaus' business processes are the same.
Right. Any other discussion?
So I just to finish the previous discussion, I always feel better when the Office of Management of Finances gives me an opinion on the financial pieces of it. So if I could have that before we vote, that would be great. And then I had a question on the technology part of it that you outlined with the list of software that we need to buy. Is it intended that those would be funded through the rate-funded bureaus?
I'm going to answer that. We're coming back based on a request from Commissioner Leonard. Bureau of Technology Services will be working with the Bureau of Financial Planning to figure out not just to deal with this particular upfront investment, but there's a larger, bigger need to for technology through the permitting process. So that's going to be aired out as part of the work session.
Which is what I announced on Monday or Tuesday relative to the work session in January is on that issue. So we will have the specifics of what it is the system would look like and hopefully what it will cost by then and the best ideas of these folks and others as to how that should be paid for.
That this plan is not dependent on that, though, or is it?
Well, I think what we had been told is to continue with what we need for programming, and if the system is replaced, that whatever we do as far as upgrading our existing program then would be easily converted, and so it's not money lost. So
you're wanting to this we need to move forward on for the new software for this faster than the bigger revamp. Is that correct?
It's about the same time. So yeah.
I think the details. Right. But I think the larger picture has a longer time frame for implementation as opposed to some of the measures that the new process requires will need to have some programming behind it to make it work, as well as on the shelf right now with some money for programming, we can put into effect a fee estimate.